May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? We're gonna have a problem here.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the victors. Will the real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.
Hi, and welcome to the Real Weird Sisters. I'm Alice.
And I'm Martha.
And we are here today for a very special Halloween special topics show. We're going to put a spell on you today. So today we're going to be sorting the characters of the classic movie Hocus Pocus, and we've brought in a very special guest. You've heard him on our show before on our very first movie recap, but today he's here for a topic where he's truly an expert. Let's welcome my husband, Paul.
Hello, I'm the weird brother-in-law / weird husband of this podcast.
Real weird.
What'd I say?
Just weird.
Oh, weird. So I am real weird. I'm really, really weird and really, really weird about how much I like Hocus Pocus. So
that's definitely true.
Yes,
this
cosine.
Is a perfect fit for me. Hopefully I'm a little more talkative than I was during my first appearance on this podcast. I've received criticism over the month since we recorded that. That I was not the most verbose in that episode. So don't worry, I have a lot to say about Hocus Pocus.
Okay, so let's get started with just a little background. Paul, why don't you go ahead and just tell us your love for Hocus Pocus and maybe just, all of your history with it.
Well, I bet it's hard for you two not to jump in here because you two also grew up loving Hocus Pocus.
We'll get to that in a second.
But as a child of the 90s who actually grew up with a television set, I know not everyone born in the 90s grew up with a television set, but I did. And so Hocus Pocus was always a Halloween staple. We had it recorded on VHS, I think when it aired on Disney Channel way back in the day, and we just watched it all the time. So it was one of those movies that I can just still quote many, many sections of it. So I think kind of in the last, I don't know, 5 years or so, it's become really, popularized on social media, and there's so many, people talking about it and people dress up as it now. So it's kind of fun now that it's really popular in a more mainstream way. But I definitely was an OG Hocus Pocus fan before it got really big.
Martha, do you consider yourself to be an OG Hocus Pocus fan?
And not in any sense of the word. to
neither
clarify,
OG nor a fan.
Exactly. To clarify for our listeners, we did grow up with a television set. It just happened to be one that did not get any channels. So
did not get Hocus Pocus.
No, we did not get Disney Channel. We did have a television set, but we did not really use it very often. Actually, I've watched Hocus Pocus for the very first time last Halloween or last Halloween weekend. And that was, of course, because of Paul. And I guess it's better than Halloween Town, which is the other Halloween movie that Paul's shown me. So I can at least say that about Hocus Pocus.
Well, here's what I always say about it is also a huge Halloween Town fan. Maybe, depending on how big of a hit this is, you can pencil this in for next Halloween weekend. I feel like Halloween Town, it only thrives on nostalgia. Like, you had to have been there and watched it and were really into it. Like, I understand why the two of you don't get anything out of Halloween Town, but you two really should get a lot out of Hocus Pocus, because even without the nostalgia, it's a very well done movie and it's a lot of fun.
Okay, so I guess I'll just get into it. I also watched Hocus Pocus because of you, Paul. I don't remember the exact first time that we watched it, but probably about 6 years ago or so. So I've probably seen it like 5 to 6 times, so a little bit more than Martha. But I'm kind of with Martha on this one. It's fun. Definitely better than Halloween Town. And I think it's going to be really fun to sort the characters today.
You're trying not to be too rude, but I can just like read your face right now about what you really think.
Well, I can admit it is a fun movie. It's not like I sat down to watch it and was just so, like, annoyed the whole time. I mean, I was tired, but that was just only because I stayed up all night watching Stranger Things. So that's on me. That's not really the movie's fault. It is a fun watch. It's not too long. And, I mean, it feels, I wish that I had the nostalgia factor, because I can see why it's really fun for people who have that nostalgia. But I will say it is much, much better than Halloween Town. And It was fun.
Yeah, no comparison.
Yeah.
My first memory of Hocus Pocus actually was seeing, like, in Blockbuster when I was a kid and thinking, like, that looks really scary.
Yeah, actually, I have a very similar memory because I was very easily scared as a child. And we were at Blockbuster more often than you'd think, considering that we didn't really have a TV.
Well, now you can get Hocus Pocus at the Red Box I saw the other day. So it's kind of become a staple of Halloween these days.
I think it is. It's hard for me to think of a family-friendly Halloween movie that's bigger than Hocus Pocus.
Right.
Probably, yeah.
You know, like there's horror movies and stuff, but that's not really in the same category. And I'd much rather watch Hocus Pocus than a horror movie.
It is a little edgier, though. You can definitely tell that Disney was a little edgier in the early 90s. They really get fixated on talking about a virgin lighting the candle. And some of the language is a little bit edgier than Disney would get.
Yeah, I don't know if Disney would trust themselves to use the word yabos now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually pretty sexual movie. It's a little weird to watch it and think that this was, like, made for children.
Yeah.
Mostly just Sarah Jessica Parker's character.
That kind of makes it, but that's kind of makes it fun. It's that it has an edge to it. It's not completely flat, like some may say about Halloween Town.
Well, I think that pretty much sums up our history with Hocus Pocus. Martha and I are going to do our best to be respectful and not make too much fun of the movie as we go through it today, because I know probably most of the people listening are actually more in the Paul camp of, like, huge fans. But, I guess we're pretty much ready to get into the sorting.
I am. Do you think that the Sanderson sisters went to Hogwarts? Wait, when was Hogwarts founded? The 1600s. Was it around back then?
Well, the Sanderson sisters lived in America, so they would have gone to
Ilvermorny.
Oh,
they would have gone to the other one, right. Okay.
So we actually should be doing an Ilvermorny sorting.
That's true. That would be more accurate.
Yeah.
However, I don't feel like I know the Ilvermorny houses well enough to really do that.
No, I don't either, sadly.
Also, well,
there were still colonies back then, though, right? Maybe they got shipped back to England for it.
I don't...
Right? This is the 1690s. There's still colonies.
Well, yeah, but I don't think that the Wizarding World prescribed to that very much.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe for the purpose of this podcast, we can pretend that they kind of did a study abroad back in England.
They must have done a study abroad. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, we do hear about, one of my favorite parts of the movie is the English they speak in it. It's a confusing mix of modern, old, and old English. So,
wait, I have to say, Ilvermorny was founded in 1627, and Hogwarts was founded in 1590. So, what year was were the Sanderson sisters born?
Well, they were hanged in 1693.
Yeah, so they would have been at Hogwarts. They would have
gone to Ilvermorny.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that was part of the purpose with Ilvermorny's founding was to do with the Salem witch trials. I think J.K. Rowling does tie that in a little bit with its legend. But before we actually get into the sorting, we usually do like to have our guests tell us a little bit about which house that they identify with. So, Paul, what house do you think you would be sorted into if you went to Hogwarts?
Definitely Hufflepuff. I'm about as Hufflepuff as they come. I think that I would maybe somewhere along the line could have some Ravenclaw tendencies based on kind of the line of work I do in terms of being a teacher and being a world traveler and learning different languages and things. But I think definitely when it comes down to it, the qualities that most resonate with me are the hardworking, loyal, friendship, those types of things. So we have three different houses represented among the three of us.
I think you do have a lot of Ravenclaw tendencies, though. I mean, I do think you're a Hufflepuff, but I wouldn't sell yourself short on the Ravenclaw.
And he has a lot of Slytherin tendencies as well.
Well, that's true, too.
Extremely cunning.
Yeah, right.
Extremely innovative.
Yes. Cunning is the last word I'd use to describe me.
Yeah. We have all the houses represented except for Slytherin.
Well, I'm just bracing myself for a lot of people to complain about us being mean to Slytherins.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of Slytherins in this Sorting Hat episode, so we'll get there.
I guess we'll have to see. Okay, so let's go ahead and get started. Let's start with one of the characters I would consider the most annoying in the cast.
No, we're starting off good, being super respectful here. Okay, go for it.
But really a pretty strong character. A lot of character development for this one. Let's go ahead and start with Danny. So, Martha, do you want to go ahead and start us off with Danny?
Well, I won't hurt your ears by screaming here, although I'm tempted to. That's probably the only really good Danny impression that I have here, but I won't do it for you. I think Danny, I mean, she's obviously really, really young, but I think she's pretty precocious. So I could see her going into Ravenclaw because she definitely is smart. But I do think that her most defining characteristic is that she is very brave and she really has a lot of guts. We see her, you know, standing up for herself a lot. And she just, I think, definitely seems like a Gryffindor, even though she has those precocious and, like, witty tendencies as well.
Okay. How about you, Paul? What did you think for Danny?
Well, I will agree with you that she probably is the number one most annoying character in in this movie. I mean, our first introduction to her is her jumping out of the closet, making fun of Max rolling on the bed, saying, "Ooh, Allison, kiss me, I'm Allison, woo!" Like, she's extremely obnoxious. But I think if you think about her biggest moments in the movie and the things that really kind of show her true character is the fact that she's brave. She doesn't back down. When she's with Max and Ice and what's his face?
Jay
are, like, kind of, you know, bullying them. She, like, stands up to them and tells them, like, "Hey, I got my big brother here. Like, you can't push us around." You know, she, right to Winifred's face, tells her that she's ugly on the inside and the outside. So I definitely also sorted her into Gryffindor based on all of her brave, heroic, stand up for the common good moments of this movie.
Okay, and I have to say, I'm going to make this just a blowout here. I also put Gryffindor for Danny. I thought this one was actually probably the easiest character for me to sort of the whole movie. Like, there were just so many moments when Danny was the one who was sort of standing up to people rather than her older brother or Allison. So I think that, yeah, she is just not hesitating at all when it comes to standing up for herself. Like, she's goes and tells the witches, like, she brought them back, even though she didn't. And just, I don't know, she never shies away from, like, taking responsibility for things or, like, trying to get out of situations with her own bravery. So I would agree with you guys that she's in Gryffindor. Now, she is pretty annoying, but I have to say, like, that's not really necessarily thanks to the fact that this is, like, Hocus Pocus. I think it's also just that she's supposed to be really annoying as the younger sister.
Yeah,
we know all about that.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. And I mean, I was going to say another thing about Danny. One of her most boldest decisions is that lipstick choice. So if for that alone, she is Gryffindor for sure.
Well, speaking of her bold, brave fashion choices, I was going to wonder, you, Martha, as the younger sister, did you ever force Alice to go trick-or-treating as Wendy and Peter Pan with tights?
I don't think I had that much sway over Alice when we were that age. I think the age difference for us was such that Alice just bossed me around. I never got to boss her around the way that Danny bosses Max around.
Well, the thing is, I feel like Max and Danny actually have a fairly similar age difference as you and I do.
Oh, yeah, actually, you're probably right.
He's what, like 16 or something?
Yeah, I think Max is more of just a wet blanket, though.
Oh, that's mean.
No,
true.
How about character comparisons, though? Do we have anyone in Harry Potter that Danny seems similar to?
I mean, I guess she could be sort of like Ginny, being a younger sibling and, like, I don't know. No, she's not like Ginny.
Yeah, I could kind of see Ginny, like, when she gets a little older, she might be more like Ginny. Because Ginny's also a Gryffindor, pretty brave and stuff, but I don't know. I didn't see a strong character comparison with Danny.
Maybe, actually, I don't know. Ginny's probably the only younger sister we really see, right?
Yeah, that I can think of right now. Well, Petunia and Lily.
Yeah, she's not a Lily.
No.
And clearly, if you haven't figured it out by now, like, I've read Harry Potter, I'm in the middle of my reread and listening to The Real Weird Sisters, my strength will not be to pull out Harry Potter characters and compare them to Hocus Pocus. But if you want to know anything Hocus Pocus related, I'm your expert.
Yeah, so Paul, how far are you in our show? I know you're sort of listening.
Oh, I know. I'm bad. I'm like I'm a bad, real, weird brother-in-law / husband because...
I like how the brother-in-law part always seems to come first.
Oh, I'm
well, that's
one.
That's, No, that's what I have to think about more. It's more of a mouthful. I had gotten finally caught up all through Azkaban and was reading it. I like rereading the chapter and listening to it like a true reread. And then things got busy at the beginning of book four. And so I'm somewhere at the beginning of book four. So one of my goals in the coming weeks is to start trying to catch up to that every day to read a chapter and listen. So my goal is to catch up soon.
Only about like 20 a lot episodes to go.
I know. Well, luckily I have a long book, but it's kind of dangerous because I'm like, oh yeah, they're still on book four, so I don't feel the pressure yet. But I mean, it's like, you know, almost a four, like, you know, 25 chapters is going to be a lot to catch up on. But
okay, well, let's go ahead and get the sorting hat onto Dany's head. We haven't really discussed yet what the sorting hat is going to be, but I think we're kind of in an interesting predicament here, just being with the fact that these are. This is surrounding witches, kind of same thing as Harry Potter. So, Martha, do you have any ideas of what the sorting hat should be?
Well, beforehand, I suggested the sorting Mary's hair, but you guys didn't seem to take to that idea very well.
That, like, bun, like, half bun, like, falling off her head?
It's in, like, the shape of a witch's hat for part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't think anyone else wants to have that on their head if they can avoid it.
Yeah, true.
So I say we stick more of just like Danny's traditional like pointed witch's hat, right?
Oh yeah, Danny does wear a hat.
So yes. I guess we're going with the sorting witch hat, even though the sorting hat is also a witch hat.
Ooh, how about the sorting yabos?
I don't know that we need to. This is a family podcast, so we don't really need that.
Explore that anymore.
But I like yabos.
Back in fact.
Okay, well, right. Let's just do sorting witch's hat, I guess.
And I get the honor to place the hat onto Dany, correct?
You do.
I think you do.
Right, and so I'm going to be, I have not practiced this yet, but as I do, I'm going to try to incorporate a little bit of Winifred's call as she calls out to her book, as she calls for it. So I'm going to try this as we place the sorting hat onto Dany's, and she is in Gryffindor.
That's pretty good for your first one.
Thanks.
You do a pretty good Winifred impression there.
It's a little uncanny, actually.
All right, well, let's move on. Let's go to the other, non-magical female lead, and that is Allison.
Is that a category I got the Oscars?
The best non-magical female lead.
In a children's film.
Okay, so Allison. Paul, where did you put Allison?
Well, I know I'm going to be interested to hear what you say, Alice, because I remember you saying you were a little bit more conflicted about her, but for me, when I was doing the run through of these characters, hers was pretty easy for me, and that she really strikes me as the Ravenclaw of this bunch. She's the person who knows all about the Sanderson sisters. One of my favorite scenes in the movie is when they open up in the schoolhouse or whatever, they're in the classroom, and that really funny teacher is like going, she's like so funny. And then when Max is such a doubter on Halloween and they turn to Allison, and Allison gives this whole spiel where she's like, actually Halloween is based on the holiday All Hallows Eve, and gives this, you know, blood, this gives all this like history of it.
Woo!
Well said, Allison. And they all clap. Anyway, so, and like her mom runs the museum, so she knows all these things about the Sanderson sisters, and she's one of the characters in this book that's always kind of provide, there's someone else that I think also fills this role, but she provides a lot of like information about historical things and what's going on, and she's also a very logical character in the movie. She's the one who really jumps on that salt thing, and you know, that can of salt that never ends,
the like never
that,
ending
it,
salt
it lasts, you know, for she like makes like, you know, 15 salt circles before it finally runs out.
Are we sure that she's non-magical? Because
yeah, it's true. She was able to put a spell on the salt container.
Yes, it's like the, what's the thing in Harry Potter, like in the bag where it keeps, you can keep pulling more things out.
Yeah. Like Hermione's bag?
Yeah, Hermione's bag. It's kind of like Hermione's salt can there. So for me, Allison struck me as a Ravenclaw right away.
Okay. I have to say, I agree with you on Ravenclaw. For me, I kind of didn't, I don't know. Like I said, Allison was a little bit more difficult just because I kind of feel like a lot of times she's a little bit flat. Like she doesn't really...
Are you talking about her yabos?
She's definitely not flat there.
Well, anyway, I just feel like a flat character. She doesn't say that much, but I guess she is there just as the narrator to tell us information about the Sanderson sisters and Halloween. But what made me think that she was in Ravenclaw was just the fact that she had such a passion for that subject, and the fact that she was so, like, obsessed with Halloween and that kind of thing. I think that that's a very Ravenclaw trait, to really, like, fixate on one area of knowledge and really have a passion for it. So I agree with everything that you said, but I actually had sorted her into Ravenclaw for sort of a different reason. Okay, so how about you, Martha?
Yeah, and I also have her in Ravenclaw, just to make this a unanimous vote. But also, I would say for a third reason, which I think just the fact that she is, like, that she believes in something so, like, superstitious. I mean, she's not superstitious necessarily, but, like, she has this faith in this, like, supernatural thing. And that's definitely a Ravenclaw characteristic. That's the house that Professor Trelawney is in. And I think most divination or seers end up in Ravenclaw, because it's just it's a kind of just that obsession with the supernatural. And I think that that's sort of the way that we see Allison a lot, but also for the reasons that you two said.
Well, I can think of another reason too. She's also sharp-minded when she gives Max back his phone number and says trick or treat and hands him the paper and walks
classic
away, and it's Max's phone number that he slipped to her at school. So
yeah, that is a classic burn.
Super clever.
Like, Max is so excited and then he opens it, it's just his number. Oh, joke's on you, Max.
And then she puts up her, like, red hood and walks away like Little Red Riding Hood. Love Allison.
Is Allison your favorite character?
No.
You just love them all, I guess.
I do. Well, yes, I do love most of them.
All right. Well, I guess we've pretty much established that Allison's going to be in Ravenclaw. Does anybody ever consider another house for her?
No.
No, not really.
No, I can't really see any other houses.
Yeah. So same with me. Even though, like, at first it just, none of them were standing out to me, but then, yeah, once I thought of Ravenclaw, none of the other ones made any sense. All right, let's go ahead and get Danny's hat onto Allison's head.
Ravenclaw!
It's musical that time.
Well, it kind of is when she says that, when she calls the book, there is a little, you know, you guys know how musical I am.
Yes.
So, I'm just trying to mimic.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's round out the three kids, get them all sorted. So let's go ahead and start with Max. I guess I'll go ahead and start with him. He was a little bit challenging for me to sort as well. I don't know, because the thing is, he exemplifies a lot of traits of Ravenclaw, kind of like Allison, and kind of in the same way that Danny does, just being fairly quick-witted. He's, first of all, pretty good at the comebacks. Like, he's able to, I don't know, just, like, quickly turn around and burn people, I guess.
Most of the time.
Yeah, that's true. Not all the time. But he's also a really quick thinker as far as, like, coming up with solutions on how to get out of sticky situations. So, like, when he turns on the fire, whatever those things are.
The burning ray of death, or the burning rain of death.
The burning rain of death. And then with his...
He makes fire in his hand.
The great and powerful Max.
And then with his daylight savings trick, although I'm starting to think maybe Allison came up with that originally. What do you think?
Yeah, but he delivers the line of one thing that what they don't know, daylight savings time.
So epic.
At the same time, he really does have a goofy side, so that's kind of a Ravenclaw thing, too. So I was kind of leaning toward putting him in Ravenclaw, but then, I don't know, that just doesn't seem quite right to me. So I'd like to hear what either of you two has to say. So, Martha, what did you think about Max?
I also was thinking about Ravenclaw, and I do have him in Ravenclaw because I think it's kind of the sort of the opposite reason of Alex or Allison, which is funny because, you know, he's completely does not believe in anything about Halloween. But I think that that comes from his being really skeptical. And that's definitely a Ravenclaw characteristic, which is, I mean, of course, funny because, you know, the supernatural idea is also Ravenclaw in some ways. So but I just think that Max's skepticism and just being just sort of like he's really confident in what he knows and what he believes. He doesn't really want to hear anybody else's perspectives because he thinks he knows what he's doing, and that seems like he's confident in his own knowledge, which is a Ravenclaw characteristic. I could see a case being made for Hufflepuff as well because I think he's loyal, I guess, to his sister in some way. I don't know. I don't really know why he would be in Hufflepuff, but that'd be my second choice.
Okay, and then how about you, Paul?
It's actually funny. I think Ravenclaw is the last house I would sort him into. For me, it was going back in between Gryffindor or Hufflepuff. And the reason that those two stuck out to me more, that I went back and forth between, is like Martha started saying here, there is some real dedication that he proves, especially by the end, to his sister, that he's willing to drink the potion for his sister.
Yeah, that's true.
And he's like, he's just,
it's kind of a foolhardy move as well.
He's just like so dedicated this whole time that he's working towards this goal. And I think the reason why it turned me off to Ravenclaw is even though he does have some very smart maneuvers he does throughout the entire movie, like he does so many blunders that just like sets them up for all these issues. Like his whole lighting the candle thing was such a dumb move, and I feel like he's not logical. He just is on emotion. He isn't even gonna do anything for Halloween, but then he sees Allison and her yabos and it's like, okay, let's do it, let's go for it. I just do not think he thinks things through, so that's what turned me off to that. I did think, actually, I think probably what I was gonna end on ultimately was Gryffindor, because I think that as the movie goes on, we do see him doing these very brave things, sometimes a little bit reckless, like the moment I mentioned where he drinks the potion and so to save his sister, and just kind of his, it just seems like he's doing all these things to help get rid of the witches, but he's a little bit sloppy with it, but he just is like, you know, just trying everything he can. So I definitely am more leaning towards a Gryffindor or Hufflepuff. But if the two of you are so, you know, set on Ravenclaw, I don't know.
Well, the thing is, for me, I wasn't necessarily set on Ravenclaw. It just was kind of where a lot of the traits I wrote down would have placed him. But honestly, when I was trying to come up with a character comparison, the character that he most reminded me of was actually Harry, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I can see that.
But he kind of has a saving people complex the same way that Harry does. So that's kind of a Gryffindor thing. And then, I don't know, his goofy side kind of reminds me of maybe Fred and George, like when he hijacks the school.
Plays the prank.
And the school PA system.
He acts like he's on the radio show. Like, we're here with blah, 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 and Winifred Sanders.
Well, like you
kind
said,
of
he's
Fred and George / Lee Jordan thing.
Yeah, like you said, he is pretty foolhardy. I mean, even just the first scene we see him in, that he's like, oh, it's all, Halloween was invented by the candy companies or whatever. Like, that's, he just runs his mouth whenever, and that's probably, I mean, I guess it could be a sort of a know-it-all characteristic, which would be maybe more Ravenclaw, but it also could just be, like, that reckless Gryffindor side. So I'm kind of being convinced here.
Well, and, you know, when he first runs into Ice and Jay, you know, one of the first, he does not really back down from him. I mean,
that's
they get
true.
They get his shoes from him, but his first thing he tells Ernie is that maybe he can learn to breathe through his nose.
Well, yeah, that was one of the burns that I had written down,
right,
as him being really clever.
Right, but I just think he's not like...
But Harry also is pretty good at the comebacks in Harry Potter, so...
Yeah. I'd be willing to switch to Gryffindor here.
All right. Well, me too. Ooh. I think we should go ahead and switch that over.
We can defer to our Hocus Pocus expert here, because I don't think it's that.
You.
I don't think it's the fault of us not knowing our Hogwarts houses well, Alice. I think it's just we don't really know Max as well as Paul does.
Well, this is proving what a complex movie this is, that we're having this discussion about their main the main protagonist.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So let's. The other thing, I guess, that's working against him being in Ravenclaw is I think Max is actually a little cooler than most Ravenclaws.
That's true. I don't think he's, like, a super good student or anything.
Well, and like, his whole California
California.
Yeah,
what did
Hollywood.
She say? His, his California tie-dyed, laid-back point of view. Tubular.
All right, well, let's go ahead and put the hat onto Max's head.
Gryffindor.
That's not gonna get old.
Okay, well, we've been talking about them a lot. Let's go ahead and sort the two bullies.
Do they get sort of like a pair? Like it's kind of like a Fred and George thing, and they just both
not necessarily.
I think they do, but I mean, they both have really defining characteristics that are super different from each other. So it's gonna be really hard to talk about them together. They're so different.
Yeah, they really are,
and they're so complex.
Yes,
you know?
That's true.
Right. So let's. Let's go ahead. Let's just talk about them together, and we can see if we want to sort them together or not. Paul, where did you have Ice and Jay?
Okay,
Ernie. Well, Ice.
Ernie. Told you, I ain't Ernie no more. It's Ice. So I think, even though I said I'm not good about pulling comparisons here, they are totally a Crab and Goyle for me.
Yes.
That they're just these two kind of blubbering kind of idiots, but like very like self-centered and all about, you know, all about themselves. And there is, you can see some innovation with what they do, even though they're not that smart. You know, we see some of their plans too with them and all their cool friends when they're stopping the kids and taking their candy bars. We see them coming up with plans, like watching babes undress at 3 a.m. Like they're always kind of up to something. They're always scheming. They're trying to get ahead. Like they're bad Slytherins. Like they're not getting good grades in any of their classes. But I think I don't really see where else they can go besides being Slytherin.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on this one. I would put them in Slytherin as well. I definitely agree that they seem like Crab and Goyle, and I could see them, like, if there was a cupcake at the end of the hall, then
oh,
giggling
totally.
About it and feeling like they got so lucky, even though it's like really sketchy.
Yes.
So I don't know. They're definitely a Crab and Goyle to me. However, the one thing with them being in Slytherin, like, they're definitely not cunning. They're definitely not accomplished, innovative, resourceful. Like, so that's the thing. Like, this is where I think we sometimes run into problems with Slytherins, is that the Slytherins we see in the book a lot of times don't fit the characteristics of what we've been told Slytherin is. Like, they're just more dumb and evil.
And followers.
And so in that case, it's not like necessarily like these Slytherin traits, but they've somehow ended up in Slytherin in the books. And I think it's partially because we see it through Harry's perspective. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, I know that on paper, Ice and Jay don't really have a lot of like the true Slytherin traits. But if they were Harry Potter characters, they would definitely be in Slytherin.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess, but I mean, because really, if we're thinking about like the actual definitions of the houses, just because we haven't burned Hufflepuffs enough in this episode, they really would be the rest. I mean, they're not really anything besides that. Like, they don't really demonstrate any characteristics like resourcefulness or cunning or I guess maybe manipulative. Like, they do get what they want most of the time, so maybe that's the most Slytherin aspect, but definitely based on what we see about Slytherins in the books or the character parallels, they're definitely Crab and Goyle kind of type. Maybe not as evil as Crab, but that's, you know, we don't know what their future holds.
They are pretty mean.
Well, I guess, I mean, you never expect that Ice and Jay would lead to this kind of discussion, but one of the things now I'm wondering about as I think about these houses and the characteristics that define what house you end up in is it kind of like a spectrum or a scale where these defining things that Ice and Jay care so much about that they really do think they are and they strive to be cunning and accomplished and resourceful. They're really trying to be these. And even though, like, on a proficiency scale, they're, like, at a 1.
Yeah.
If, like, we're talking about 3 or 4 as proficient, that they're, like, you know, they're very behind the other people, that they're not good Slytherins or good at what they do as Slytherins. But would they still be considered Slytherins if those are the characteristics that are most defining to them, even if they're not the best at them, but they strive to be?
Yeah, well, and
you're
really sounding
like a Ravenclaw here.
Thank you.
With your numbers and spectrums and whatever.
Uh-huh.
All your teacher lingo.
Yeah.
Yeah, my teacher jargon.
Yeah.
Well, Martha, did you have Ice and Jay in Slytherin as well then? Or?
Yeah, I would say the only other option would be for ice. I think, I mean, he's really creative by tattooing that name onto the back of his head, shaving that name in the back of
his
head.
Where do super artistic people go? Well,
that's Ravenclaw.
Probably.
Ice is clearly a Ravenclaw. But no, I mean, I think they are Slytherins. They're Crab and Goyle without a Malfoy, and that's just kind of scary thought.
Yes.
Yeah. No one to lead them to, you know, to become the true villains that they could be.
Right. So I guess it's less scary, actually.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've got them in Slytherin. Let's go ahead and get the hat. We could probably just have them both be under the hat at the same time.
So do I get to repeat it? Do I do it twice, or is it just one sorting?
One sorting.
Slytherin.
You really drew that one out because it was for two of them.
Right.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and sort a character that I actually was not prepared to sort until about half an hour before we started this.
We're done with all the non-magical. We're done with the muggles, correct?
Right.
Well, now we're moving into the realm of the magical.
Wait, are you telling me that we're not going to sort the bus driver?
where do the pervs go? What house is them?
Double, I'm in trouble.
We're talking about how bad Ice and Jay are. Like, the fact that even they, when they see the Sanderson sisters, they say, like, oh, why do all the ugly chicks stay out late? But yet the bus driver was really into them. Shows you how horrible that bus driver was, that his standards are even lower than those two.
Yeah, well, he was also more their age, so.
Well, yeah, I love when Sarah's sitting on his lap on the bus and it's honking the horn.
Wish we would sort is that weird couple that's dressed up in their Halloween costumes and they go, the devil and his wife or whatever.
Master. And the, let me go get the little woman. He has a little woman. And he goes, oh, they call me master. Oh, yeah? Wait till you hear what I'm going to call you.
Yeah, and we're not going to sort Max and Danny's parents either. They're shining examples of good parents.
I hate them, actually. They're horrible.
Well, but the dad, I think we could easily... I think the dad's definitely, like, in Ravenclaw. He's a huge nerd.
Yeah, he is. The mom is probably...
The mom is so bizarre. Since I don't have any other platform where I can really gripe about this, let me gripe about this here for a second. The exchange in the movie, the scene that bugs me the most is...
considering the movie it's coming from.
And how many times I've seen this. When the mom and dad go to city hall, town hall, whatever, have the party. And then Max and Danny and Allison, they go there to find them. And I think Max bumps into his dad first. And that's like, fine, whatever. He goes, oh, I'm Dracula or whatever he is.
Yeah.
Okay? Then when Danny runs into her mom, it's the weirdest exchange. There were many years of watching this as a kid that I didn't realize that was actually Danny's mom.
Yeah, because, it's so weird.
Because she bumps into her, she turns around, and instead of being like, oh my God, is everything okay, Danny? You're 8 years old and you're at this party at town hall on Halloween night. Like, what's going on? She goes, mom? And she goes, what are you supposed to be, Madonna? And there's like no acknowledgement of like, what's going on? Are you okay? Like, there's just like, oh, hi, honey. Like, it's very, I mean, maybe it was her yabos that she had on as part of that costume that really kind of threw everything off. But
those are quite the yabos.
They are.
They are.
Those Madonna yabos.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad we did get to discuss that scene because literally every time we've watched Hocus Pocus, Paul has gone on a big rant about it. So now he has had a chance for a platform a little larger than just me and his brother.
Thank you. Tweet at me. @ Paul Ostelson on Twitter. Tweet at me.
Yeah, for your really burning hot takes.
Yeah.
Hocus hot takeoff.
Yeah, my biggest problem with that scene is just the fact that the parents are at a big party at City Hall. Like, that's a normal thing.
Well, it was the 90s, Alice.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, well, so anyway, now that we've gone through and talked about most of the other non-magical creatures in the show, let's go ahead and get into sorting one of the magical people in the show, Billy, the corpse zombie.
Sarah's ex-lover. And this is one where, by the end of the
movie... And Winifred's.
Winifred's, right. That was part of the drama there. Martha, would you... Would you give Al some background on Billy? Because Alice does not even really remember much about him.
Here's my problem. When I watch this movie, I enjoy it for like the first 20 minutes, like just goofy, like laughing at it, kind of just remembering some of the dumb jokes that I forgot. And then it starts to get long. Like we get it past the hour mark. I'm like, it's still going.
Yes.
And I have to sit here. And so then I get zoned out.
Alice checks out. As soon as they get burned up in the oven, Alice is like, oh, cool, it's over.
That's what happened to me this time, too. Because I was like, oh, it's almost over. Like, they're gone. It's over. And then I was like, wait, there's half an hour left. I'm going to have to watch this. But luckily, if it's not clear, I did watch this about an hour before we're recording this. So I have the memory of Billy's backstory very fresh in my mind.
Good.
Okay.
So Billy was Winifred's lover, and then she found out that he was sleeping with Sarah too, and so then she sewed his lips shut and put a spell on him so he died, and then she buried him like that, and then I don't remember how he came back to life actually now.
Well, that is kind of like we're saying, this is a pretty PG-13 plot for this little kid movie.
I know.
well, and the reason he comes back to life, because Winifred summons him in an attempt to, because the witches can't go in the graveyard, because as Max explains to us, it's hallowed ground. Witches can't step foot here. And
you
so
mean Thackeray.
Thackeray, yes, yeah, sorry. They go, she summons him from the ground, but then he's still really mad at her. And this is where he provides some of the PG-13 lingo when, you know, he yells at her, calls her a wench, and says, go to hell. And she says,
I've
been there, and I found it quite lovely.
She also met Satan, too.
Right.
Master.
and the master's little woman.
Okay.
But Billy is obviously not, like, he's the most minor character probably of the characters we're sorting here.
Yes. Martha, where did you sort Billy, since you're the Billy expert?
You got a crush on Billy?
Oh, yes, of course. He's really, I really like his sewed lips.
You have a lot of competition already. There's already Winifred and Sarah chasing after him.
Do you like him with or without his fingers?
I like him without his head the most. But, okay, so I think I...
Do you like how Danny just goes and picks up his head and hands it back to him? Like,
well,
that's a pretty Gryffindor move.
Yeah, well, we know she is a Gryffindor. Yeah. Billy was a little bit tough. I ended up putting him in Slytherin because I think he's... originally, I think I came up with the character parallel of Snape because he sort of... falls in with the wrong crowd, being the witches, and then he ends up going on the right side because he actually is the one, like, it's thanks to him that they all make it out of the graveyard, right? Or that's the reason that the witches die, basically, is he kind of saves them. So I think he's kind of the classic, like, he seems like a bad guy, but in the end he's okay. So I felt like he was sort of similar to Snape in that way, and so I put him in Slytherin for that reason.
How about you, Paul?
Well, see, now I actually have now a big conflict now, because for me, like I said, when we were discussing if we just saw him, I said, oh, absolutely, he is a Hufflepuff for sure. With this new group of friends he has, he like worked with them so hard to make sure that Winifred doesn't come and get them, and he's super loyal to them. But then now rehashing his past, he's such a minor character, but one of the main things we know about him is that he was having this affair. So I don't know how much of a Hufflepuff he is it will be if he's really not loyal. I mean, it is Winifred. So I'm questioning if I really can really, you know, talk about how loyal he is here. So I think actually maybe he actually proved himself to be a Gryffindor in this. Mm-mm. And even though he's brought back to life by Winifred to take them out, he really stands on his own morals and his own feelings and really goes to bat for this new group of, you know, Max the Virgin and his friend. So I'm actually going to say Billy is a Gryffindor.
I actually was going to put him in Gryffindor as well.
Boo. Or should I say boo, because it's Halloween.
So I agree, just because he was pretty brave, willing to get his head cut off in order to help out the kids.
Well, he's a zombie. He can.
But, I mean, just in the way that he stands up to Winifred and
he's
Sarah.
He's not a follower at all.
Well, no, but in most Slytherin don't have to be either. I don't know, though. Martha, I did really like your Snape comparison because, like, if I was going to think of a character's plot that it's most similar to, it's probably his, just being... tangled up in a love story that goes sour. But I'm going to go ahead and side with Paul here, and I'm going to say that he should be in Gryffindor.
Well, I guess I shouldn't try to get in the middle of a couple here, so I can see why you would side with your husband over your sister.
Watch out, or I'm going to have to sew your lips shut.
All right.
No, I do think, though, like, he's got to be pretty brave to have hooked up with not one, but two of the Sanderson sisters.
That's true.
All right, should we put it on?
All right, let's go ahead.
Gryffindor!
All right, and let's get to, before we get into the sisters, we have one more character, my personal favorite character of the movie, and that is Thackeray Binks. And Thackeray, the reason I love him is because he's a cat. However, I do kind of think he has a stick up his you-know-what for most of the movie. I think Thackeray was really easy for me to sort, and I would sort him into Ravenclaw just because, like I said, he kind of is a huge rule follower, huge dweeb, always lecturing them on, like, historical trivia and just being really annoying. So even though I love him, he's kind of like the worst sides of Ravenclaw. And if I was going to come up with a character comparison for him, this is going to be really weird, but I would put him as Ernie McMillan.
I don't see that at all.
Who's actually a Hufflepuff, but Ernie could be in Ravenclaw, sort of, from the way he acts. But
yeah, I guess I could see the Ernie a little bit.
Just really pompous and kind of, like, always kind of pretending like he's on such moral high ground.
I guess I don't really see Thackeray.
Hallowed ground. Witches can't set foot here.
I guess I see Thackeray less as being really pompous than just being super knowledgeable. And also, I think he's kind of, he's sassier than Ernie McMillan is.
That's true, okay.
He loves to, like, sass Max and be, like, super condescending to him about how, like, but it's, like, in a witty way. It's not like a...
Yeah, he is very witty. Yeah. And I was kind of trashing on him a little bit, but I actually do find him to be a very entertaining character, so.
Yeah, I also had him in Ravenclaw. I thought about Hufflepuff because he is really loyal to Emily by, you know, staying with her and, you know, I mean, I guess it's his, not his choice to have that as his sentence, but, you know, his loyalty to Emily is kind of the reason that he's in the situation that he is in.
Emily!
But yeah, I think Ravenclaw is where I would put him as well.
How about you, Paul?
Well, actually, my initial reaction was I thought, oh, we're going to have another Gryffindor here because, you know, in the opening scenes before he's a cat, he races into the woods where, you know, him and whoever that else, that guy is, where they're talking about the purple smoke coming from the woods, and they say, like, look there, they conjure. And so I was thinking, oh, he's going to be another Gryffindor. But the more I thought about his role in the show, is he and Allison actually have a lot of similarities in being the historical trivia person, the logical person in the group. And he, even more than Allison, I think, kind of spells out logical steps of how to beat these witches. He, you know, knows about the graveyard. He tells them about the book, not to even open it because it's going to cause all these issues. And he really has to be the voice of reason the entire movie. So he, I think, is very firmly a Ravenclaw. And he also has a broom up as you know what, so.
Yes.
All right. Well,
or a vacuum.
All right, well, let's go ahead and get that hat onto his head.
Ravenclaw!
And we don't have any Hufflepuffs yet, so I'm interested to see if we get any Hufflepuffs. But we are finally on to the three sisters, the Sanderson sisters. Martha, which sister would you like to start with?
Let's start with Mary, I think. Just get her out of the way.
Love Mary. She's kind of like you, Martha, how she has the nose that smells everything, sniffs everything out. Mm-hmm. Do you relate to her?
Yeah, I was going to say that actually is one of the most defining characteristics of Mary, is that she's always smelling children and like, I smell children, but I only see hobgoblins or whatever she says the name. Yeah. So yeah, she's not the brightest bulb in the shed or whatever the phrase is.
Well, the thing is, here's the hard part. People will all, when you talk about the witches, people will say, oh, the dumb witch. And it's unclear, is that Mary or is it Sarah? Because they're both dumb in their own ways.
Yeah, ways.
Very true.
In very different ways.
Like, they're both dumb and like, in some sense, the ditzy one. Well, they're both kind of dumb and ditzy. You have to be specific.
I think Sarah's more the ditzy
Dits
one.
And,
but Mary's, like, pretty simple.
She is simple.
Like, so when that baby comes on the screen at the master's house and she just goes, rah!
Yeah. So I guess I'll talk about Mary a little bit more. My first inclination was to put her in Slytherin because, of course, we have the three witches who are all pretty verifiably evil. But I guess the only other house I could see for her would be Hufflepuff, and I don't want to see Hufflepuff. I don't want to have Hufflepuff people be mad at me. It's just because I do think she is a very loyal sister. So we see Winifred and Sarah fighting more than Mary ever is with the two of them, and I think she kind of, there are a couple scenes where she's sort of the peacemaker, if I'm remembering correctly. And I guess she's just, you know, she's always been along for, she's always been kind of with Winifred and Sarah. I know they're sisters, so of course it's family loyalty, but I think that if I was going to say a house besides Slytherin, which I wanted to, I would say Hufflepuff.
So you're gonna go with Hufflepuff for Mary?
Well, it's only because I don't have any other Hufflepuffs, and I feel like we have to have at least one Hufflepuff in a movie.
All right. Paul, how do you feel about Mary?
Well, Martha, I'm going to actually take your ideas and run with them because I think you're dead on. I think she is the Hufflepuff of this movie.
And this,
like,
is coming from a Hufflepuff people.
And it's coming from me. And I think they're actually, like, I think of the three witches, she almost is, like, probably the best person out of the three of them.
Yeah, definitely.
And that she, like, her defining characteristics besides her sniffing out children all the time is her loyalty to Winifred, that when Winifred's upset, she's the one who consoles her. She's the one that gets her things. You mentioned the peacemaking moment, and that definitely is true. Before they go get to the bus, that Mary leads them in a calming circle, and that's when she says, and then Winifred tells her, "I am calm," and then she says, "Sister," like something about "thou shalt not lie" or something like that. And so she really has to be the one to bring them together. I think she is, I think, even before Slytherin, Mary is really, I don't even feel like Mary doesn't even care about getting younger or looking prettier, whereas both Winifred and Sarah are very vain. Mary isn't. She very much is just about working for her sisters and being helpful and being useful. She'll ride on the vacuum cleaner if she has to. She is the most Hufflepuff of anyone in this movie.
Yeah, and I have to agree with that. I was surprised you were so hesitant, Martha. I think maybe it was just because you were afraid of our listeners' response.
That her real weird brother-in-law would be upset?
Well, mostly our listeners. Sorry, Paul. But
your real weird listeners?
No, yeah. And I think Mary's a Hufflepuff as well, and not necessarily for bad reasons. Like, I just think she's not, doesn't have this sort of cunning edge to her that most Hufflepuffs do. Like, she's not motivated by, like, trying to get power or anything really evil. I mean, she's just more motivated by, like, wanting to hang out with her sisters.
Yeah, and eat children. Really Hufflepuff characteristic.
She's really hungry. Like, Hufflepuffs love good food.
That's true. Very good point. Yeah, okay, I'll take it.
So I have to say, I also would put her in Hufflepuff. Again, we've been pretty unanimous this whole podcast. There's only been a couple disagreements, but I think that shows us that really Mary does belong in Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and sort her.
Hufflepuff.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about Sarah next.
Hold on. Before we leave Mary, one of my favorite lines about her, and one thing that a discussion point about the movie is just really how inconsistent it is with the way they speak, that supposedly they're from, you know, the 1690s, and there's certain things that just, like, throw them off, like a road, like, you know, like that's, like, such a weird concept for them. Yeah, tis firm, and they have to cross that road.
Must be some sort of black river.
Black river, yes. But there's, like, so many things that don't really throw them off, like, in this new world and stuff, and they use, you know, the language they use is, and the reason I'm talking about Mary here is Mary's line when she first meets Danny, she's, like, poking her about how plump she is. She goes, oh, shishka baby! And it's just, like, so goofy that she would even know what the concept of a shish kebab was, or, you know, later on, Winifred tells Max to pull over, let me see your driver's permit, and just things like that. So I think that you know, that inconsistency is established right away with Mary as she starts poking at Danny and calling her a shishka baby.
And show us how much she loves to eat.
Yes.
Okay, so let's go ahead and talk about Sarah. For me, I don't know. Sarah was a little bit difficult just because, kind of like Mary, she's, well, again, kind of dumb, kind of ditzy, like Paul said already. So not really the most clever and cunning, but I do think she has more of an sort of ambitious and devious side to her, just with how obsessed she is with the devil when she meets him.
Yes. That how boy crazy she is.
She's kind of the one who's the most obsessed with the devil.
Yes.
She's very boy crazy. That's a PG way to put it. And, you know, she's just, I don't know. I just feel like she has more of an edge to her than Mary. So I'm inclined to still put her in Slytherin, even though not just because she's a witch, but just because she does have that edge to her. Martha, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, Slytherin is really my inclination as well. But I mean, the more you were talking about her boy craziness, I mean, that makes me think she's sort of obsessive, which could be Ravenclaw. But she's also not very smart, so no. I have her in Slytherin as well. I wanted to throw in some line about wanting to play with Sarah.
She wants to play with all the boys and tie. She wants. She wants to tie up Ice. She wants to play with.
She wants
Ice and Jay, right?
And she also wants to hang up Thackeray and play with him.
Play with him too. She definitely. We see she wants to play with the master, the devil.
Oh yes.
She wants to play with the firemen, the one that that they mistake as witch hunters. She sits on the bus driver's lap.
Mm-hmm. He wants to play with her too.
Right. That play that was goes mutual.
The devil was mutual as well.
Yeah. That's true. But the little woman was not too happy about that plague.
Yeah. So Paul, where would you put her?
She was the most complicated of the witches. And I think, you know, like when you get to these characters, you try to make a case for anything but Slytherin. Yeah. So for a while there, I was thinking, well, maybe it's going to be, you know, both Mary and Sarah, these two Hufflepuffs that are just kind of going along. But the more you think about it, the more she's actually not that, like, she's not a good team player.
No.
She's way into her, like, boy craziness. She messes things up. Like, she's the one that really adds to them getting hanged in the beginning, because when they come for them and start knocking on the door, they try to get rid of the, you know, the villagers by saying, oh, we're just three spinster ladies spending a quiet night at home. And then Sarah pops in with sucking the lives out of little children. And just like always just ruins things for them and is just way more into her own thing. But it's interesting because, so I'm going to sort her as a Slytherin, but I'm doing that as, it's interesting because it's not for the same kind of goals that Winifred is really set out on. It's like, she's Slytherin in a sense of like was really into whatever she wants, and it's not aligning with kind of the main like goal of the movie of the three witches. It's just all about whatever Sarah wants. Like that's what she's most focused on, is like making herself happy and playing with whatever she needs to make herself happy.
Yeah, I agree. I think she's definitely very self-interested and, you know, motivated to for out of like self-preservation, and then also just like her own interests, like I said.
Now, how does her late night solo on the broomstick when she, because it's her job to lure in the children, that is one thing that she does do the best.
Mm-hmm.
But it may also just be a chance of her to kind of roll around on a broomstick and kind of look hot, so
and let her yabos fall out of her dress.
Right, exactly. So that is, in one sense, that's where she's the most useful, is that she lures in the children with her voice.
She's kind of a siren type.
Right.
All right, well, let's go ahead and sort her into her house.
Slytherin!
And that brings us to our final Sanderson sister and our final character that we're going to sort today, Winifred. And I think she's definitely, I mean, without question, the star of this movie.
You said last night as we were watching this, you said she's the reason this movie is so good.
Yeah, I said that's the reason that this movie isn't a Halloween Town. It yes. At least can stand because of her. She's really funny. You can just tell that Bette Midler is really enjoying herself the whole time and just really getting into the role, having fun with how goofy it is and how, like, just ridiculous the whole thing is. So it's fun. It's fun to watch her, and she's definitely probably my favorite character. Let's go ahead, Martha, you can start with Winifred.
She's Slytherin. I don't really have any other things to say about her. I mean, she's like a maybe Bellatrix type. I'm not sure if that's maybe
I think that's kind of how Helena Bonham Carter plays Bellatrix.
Yeah, that's true. So maybe I'm just getting my movies mixed up here. But, I mean, I think it's very clear that she's a Slytherin. I mean, yeah, she's very much the leader type of Slytherins, which we don't see in any of the other Slytherins that we've talked about here. But all the other ones are more of her, are not her followers, but are followers. And I think just Winifred is a clear Slytherin.
Yeah, and I think she's in Slytherin for good reasons. Like, I mean, not that she uses the reasons for good, but, like, she's in there not because she's just evil, but also that she's very cunning, she's very ambitious, she's very resourceful. Like, all of those traits that could be used for good, that's the reason that she's in Slytherin. So I agree with you on that. How about you, Paul?
Well, I just want to make sure that, you know, Winifred gets the discussion she deserves here. So I think there are some characteristics that we see from her in other houses, and I think that's because she just is, like, the most developed character in this, probably, especially out of the magical, like, people in the movie, for sure. I think there is some, her sharp-minded, logical, witty sense. I mean, she just, like, delivers, like, you know, line after line after line of just how she responds to people in the movie. You know, one of the first scenes we see of her is when they're about to hang her, and they're like, "I will ask thee one final time, what hast thou done with Thackeray Binks?" She goes, "Thackeray, answer! Don't know, cat's got my tongue." Then you hear Thackeray meowing and stuff. So she really is, like, sharp-minded and clever and those types of things. And then there is, I think, some Gryffindor characteristics in her, in that, like, her undoing in some ways is the fact that she's, like, so, like, prideful about doing, like, what she wants to do. Like, she just needs to make sure that Danny is the one they get after she calls her ugly. And this is kind of what leads to, in the end, they could have all those kids that showed up at 5 a.m. with half of them still in their costumes, by the way. That's one of my other gripes with this movie, is that after they lure them in at 5 a.m, that all these, like, were these kids, like, out drinking all night, and that's why they had costumes on still? Like,
6-year-olds?
Yeah, these, like, 7-year-olds. Like, why are they showing up to the, you know, witch's house in their Halloween costumes still? You know, school should be happening in a couple hours, but anyway.
And, like, the ones whose faces are painted, like, right. Did your parents not make you wash your face before you went to bed?
They're all dancing till they die at town hall.
Yeah.
But I think that she gets that Gryffindor little streak in her where she just, like, is so confident in what she's doing and so brave, and she's just gonna, like, go with what she thinks is right because it needs to be, you know, that the wrong needs to be righted type of thing, that there is a little bit of that in her. And then I think any Hufflepuff tendencies in her would be her hardworkingness and her dedication to the cause that is at hand. But, I mean, hands down, she has to be a Slytherin. This whole movie is about her mission. She's the spokesperson for it. She's the figurehead. And, you know, she uses all the different Slytherin characteristics that you both were talking about, you know, innovative, resourceful, ambitious, determined she is. And you think at least a little bit accomplished. I mean, they did get Emily there in the beginning, which I think it's also, like, kind of pretty gruesome way to open the movie, that this girl just gets, like, the life sucked out of her, and then she just kind of doubled over, like, in the chair in the background. Like, that's pretty, like, I feel like as a kid I didn't really get that she actually just died right there.
Yeah,
now, she had the soul sucked out of her.
Well, soul, I know, but, like, now, like,
she's
looking,
like, Winifred's like a dementor.
Yeah.
But now just looking at it, just like, ooh, that's pretty gruesome. Like, opening scene here is that, like, that little girl just, like, dies and is, like, you know, like, it's like they kind of throw a blanket over her like when they start pounding on the door. So, but yes, Winifred is a Slytherin for sure.
All right, well, okay, let's get the hat on to Winifred to confirm this sorting.
So she gets to sing to herself here, Slytherin.
Remember, that's the last time we're ever going to hear that voice.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we had a pretty good discussion today. This is a little bit shorter sorting hat, but I think that makes sense considering this movie is maybe not quite as...
Hey, you did pretty good being polite. Just because we're at the end of this doesn't mean you get to start being rude.
I think that's exactly what it means.
But hopefully this brought a little bit of Halloween joy to all of you, and it wasn't just a bunch of hocus pocus.
Just a bunch of hocus pocus.
Yeah. So I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much for coming on with us, Paul.
Thanks for having me. This is, like, you know, one of my favorite topics. So I can't wait for Halloween Town next year, Halloween Town 2 in 2 years, and Halloween Town High and then Return to Halloween Town.
Oh boy, you know that way too well.
Yes. Calabar's Revenge.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
But let's save that for another Halloween.
Yeah, so happy Halloween to all of our listeners. I hope you have a very fun time. And like I said, I hope that this is more enjoyable than a lot of Harry's Halloweens. He's had some pretty traumatic things happen to him on his Halloween.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
All right. Well, Martha, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I'm just really excited that we got to do this as a special 101st episode for us. I know yesterday on our 100th episode, I mentioned that I was thinking I might resign, but this episode has given me new life, and I'm completely convinced that I will stay on for at least another 100 episodes.
Perfect.
Doing this podcast was like sucking the life out of a little child, and now you
you're rejuvenated,
young,
or at least younger.
Yeah. What? It's a start.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks for joining us, Paul.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Paul, where can our listeners find you in case they didn't get enough of you today? Which would be hard to picture, but...
If you want to talk some Harry Potter, Hocus Pocus stuff, find me on Twitter. I'm at Paul Osleson.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we will be back on Monday with our usual book club episode. We are going to be on Chapter 23. Is that right, Martha?
Yep, that's right, and that is the Yule Ball.
Perfect. So look forward to skipping right from Halloween straight into Christmas.
Can't wait to hear you guys discuss those dancing lessons.
Well, and that's what the candy company is going to do, too, after Halloween, to just skip right to Christmas.
So. Yeah, so we're going to get a taste of what it's like to be a candy company.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next week, we're the Real Weird Sisters.
We're the Weird Sisters, we're the Real Weird Sisters. All you other Weird Sisters are fine, but not the Vickers. Will the Real Weird Sisters please stand up? Please stand up. Please stand up.